We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or simpler, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in Indiana or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/pace, P-A-C-E. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This is Tyrese Halliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line and hits again.
Memories have been made.
Halliburton. A deep three for the lead.
Oh, baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella. Fake shoots and hits.
But this is Indiana.
It down.
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Pacer fans, we have ourselves a series. The Indiana Pacers come out in Game 2 and take care of business on the road against the Milwaukee Bucks, beating them by 17 points, 125-108. Fauci, that is how you bounce back after a bad, embarrassing performance in Game 1.
I'm on top of the world, and I think this fan base is as well. The drought's over, Alex. It was April 27th, 2018. That was the Pacers' last playoff win. Nearly 6 years ago, the drought's done, and this is how you respond. Everybody needed to see something, and we saw it early on from this Pacers team. They weren't backing down, and they were in control of much of this game.
I mean, if you look at this game when it first started out, there was a lot that was going in the Bucks' favor. It felt like we might have a repeat of Game 2, mm-hmm. But things settled down. and Pascal Siakam once again put the Pacers on his back, dropped another incredible amount of points, Vachi. I think it was 37, if I'm not mistaken. I'm losing my stats here. Yeah, 37 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, and 36 minutes and 36 seconds. He shot 69.6% from the field. He was incredible tonight. He was also 3 of 4 from 3, Vachi, 75% from 3. I just thought that Pascal Siakam looked like a man amongst boys in this series tonight.
This is a historic performance for any Pacer. Back-to-back games, you know, over 30 points. First Pacer to do it since Reggie Miller in 2001. What we're witnessing out of Pascal Siakam, and I said that I hoped it wouldn't get lost in translation of that rough game one loss. He's brought it. The 11 boards, the 6 assists, it just felt like anytime you needed a basket, you could go to Siakam and he'd get you that basket. And at times I was thinking they should go to him even more. But he carried the Pacers. He was as consistent as it came. 21 points at halftime. Finishes, gives you another 16 in the second half. Pascal Siakam, I think, was better than advertised. When I was watching him, I was in awe tonight. And I thought to myself, this is a guy who's better than I thought he was. And I think that a lot of other Pacers fans thought he was. This is like everything you can ask for and more.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we go back to our preview and we said Draymond Green came out and said that the Pacers need Pascal Siakam to be the number one option to win this series. Well, through the first two games, that is what he's been.
Yep.
And he has been so, so good, so calm, cool, and collected. I just go back. Remember all the conversations we had about Pascal Siakam and what it would take to get him here in Indiana, and how many people told us, oh, he's too old.
A lot.
He's 29. He doesn't fit the timeline.
Yeah. As if he's like, you know, Chris Paul or something out there. It's like, this is a guy who's 29 years old, you know, yeah, in his prime. I really do think that you can say that. What we've seen the last two games, he was worth every bit. I mean, we saw the pick that just went to Toronto as the 19th overall pick and a few other picks. These aren't like these top 10 picks that you're talking about. This trade, you had to make that trade. Where would the Pacers even be without Pascal Siakam right now? And I just feel that he's reminded the league that this is a former all-NBA player, a former all-star in this league. He looked every bit the part tonight.
Yeah, and I will say this. I think Milwaukee is going to try and make some adjustments here. Now, who knows? Will Giannis be back for game 3? Will things go to a 5-game series with Giannis? Potentially. We don't know. But I will say this, that I don't think the Brook Lopez guarding Pascal Siakam defensive assignment that Milwaukee's rolling with is working in their favor. And I think they kind of – I was so distracted in the fourth quarter as the game was getting away there. I'm trying to remember if Lopez was still the primary defender. I feel like Portis was guarding Siakam.
Bobby Portis was guarding him.
I think they switched it up, and then you saw Miles Turner start going off in that fourth quarter when they made that change. So, to me, it's like, you know what? The Pacers, two bigs, stepped up so, so big tonight. And that's what we said earlier. Like, I felt very strongly like Siakam and Turner have to outplay – Lopez and Portis, and I think that's going to be where they win this series or win these games early on without Giannis, because when Giannis comes back, like, you know, it's not going to be as easy for Pascal Siakam to do what he does, right? You got another guy out there that can block shots and can kind of roam the paint, and maybe if he's guarding him,
player of the year.
Yeah, so it's going to be a different player, but I love the way that Indiana continued just to feed Siakam, and it wasn't like it was forced; it was just getting him the ball in the right matchup, in the right mismatch, and he just took advantage.
It's funny because there was one play where Dame got switched on him, and I was just like, oh, he has to take it. I mean, all Siakam had to do was take one dribble, and he just went through Dame and laid it in. I just felt like whoever Milwaukee threw at him, they had no answer. I mean, Bobby Portis looked frustrated. Yeah, you talked about for Brook Lopez, but it's like that midi that Siakam has. I love that Carlisle is letting him be who he is, because he was making them pay on that. You talked about earlier, 3 of 4 from three. Milwaukee felt like at times he let him shoot. He made him pay for that. I just felt like tonight, between the passing, the rebounding, he had everything going on. He had a ton of tricks in his bag. And I just felt like, you know, Tyrese was looking for him, and that's what you have to do. There wasn't those spans where you were saying, why hasn't Siakam touched the ball in about a quarter or so? There was a span a little bit in the third quarter, towards like the first half, where it's like, okay, come on, let's get him his touches. Like, He killed the Bucks in the first half, but I felt they consistently went to him. Just like you said, they didn't force it, but they went to him, and he was very efficient with it.
For sure. And I think that you just look at Pascal Siakam, see what he did in these two games on the road, and that's why you make that trade.
Alpha.
That's why you go out there and get a star-level player. I know he wasn't an all-star this year, but there's a reason why he's been in consideration for many years. He's been multiple-time all-star. Like, he's a very, very, very talented player, and he knows what it takes to play at a high level in the playoffs, while a lot of these guys really don't. So he's putting them on their back and letting the other guys kind of join him. And I think you saw tonight more guys joining him than they did in the first game, but he still set the tone so early on and was like, you know what? I know that we're down right now, but we're not out, and we're just going to keep plugging away and just keep playing Pacer basketball. And I think they really found their groove with Pascal just taking advantage of all the mismatches.
No, they really did. It's funny because, you know, one of my really close friends texted me. He's like, Siakam's carried you in the first two games. Like, where's Haliburton been? And I was like, I don't care. Siakam is playing great right now. Why would you want to force anyone else to be able to, you know, take more shots or anything like this when Siakam has it going? He killed the Bucks in game one. He killed them in game two. They have a lot of questions for how they're going to guard Siakam. But I feel for right now, we don't have many questions on who the Pacers should be going to. You should make sure that Siakam's getting his touches, getting, you know, 20-plus shots. I think that it's really important because right now the Bucks don't know what to do with him. 25 shots in game one for Siakam, 23 in game two. Every single shot was necessary, and I want to give him that 26th, that, you know, 27th shot if he needs it because he's making it happen.
Yeah, it didn't feel like he was forcing anything. That's the thing. It was just like in the natural flow of the offense, mm-hmm. and that's what you love to see. And he was hitting his threes when he was left open. I think most of them were in the corner, so that's great to see. I mean, he was just a man on a mission. That's what I texted you tonight when I sent you the outline. I said Siakam was a man on a mission. Let's talk about it. And you bring up Haliburton. I do want to wait to talk about him and mm-hmm. dive into him a little bit later on in the podcast because it's crazy to think that he's this far down on the list, but I brought it up a second ago, but Miles Turner was unbelievable in this game. And I know that his stats, maybe the rebounding you'd like it to be a little higher, but I'm not even worried about that. I felt like Miles Turner hit some big time shots in that fourth quarter to kind of just extend that lead for Indiana and help them pull away. But where I felt like he was most assertive in this game was when Milwaukee went to that zone. They came back in the second quarter, retook the lead from the bench unit that was out there. They put Turner in the game. He played in that middle of that zone, and that was an area he really struggled at in the first game. But this is one thing that he was bad at, you know, back when, you know, the Cavaliers were playing the Pacers in the playoffs. He was so bad in that short role trying to be the passer out of the traps and the double teams against Oladipo. That's why you saw a lot more Sabonis in those games early on, and that's, you know, what kind of started the Turbonis thing. But now, Miles in this game, what was really effective passing the basketball and making the right read and finding the right guys, had 6 assists in this game. And I think that just tells you, you know, Turner was being so impactful in more than one way on the offense. And instead of just scoring, he was being a facilitator when they needed him to be. And he also had 3 blocks in this game. I just felt like it was a well-rounded game from Miles.
I am now 3 seasons back that I've scrolled through, and Miles Turner has not had 6 assists in at least 3 years.
Yeah.
So I'd have to look and see if that is a career high for him, but it's definitely a playoff career high. He really had it going. He made Milwaukee look silly at times because they just didn't have a way to defend him. It's a guy that, you know, we were I think people were let down in game one. He struggled from the field, 5 of 17. Tonight, just extremely efficient. You know, had it going from 3. I just felt that had it going in the post, just Turner was awesome. There's no way to put it. This was, I would say, the best playoff game of Miles Turner's career, I would say, by far.
It ties a career high.
But if you go across the board, I mean, it's got to be career highs. Obviously not rebounding wise, but I just feel that, you know, maybe he's topped 22 points in the past, but the 6 assists is definitely just phenomenal. The 7 boards you could always live with. That's you're getting Turner. That's what he does on the regular season. So we knew that this is one of those veterans and for the Pacers that has to come to play. But one thing that was great, and Siakam said when he came over to Indiana, one of the players he's always wanted to play with was Miles Turner. And some people laughed at that. I think the two players he said was Miles Turner and Kevin Durant, I believe. Well, what the Pacers bigs did tonight shows exactly why a guy like Siakam was saying, I want to play with Miles Turner, because those two tonight, they were incredible.
Yeah, I mean, they outscored Brooklyn's – or not Brooklyn. I'm saying Brooklyn because of Brook Lopez. Excuse me. The Bucks, front court of Portis and Lopez, they had 22 and 14, so they had 36 points. That's what Siakam had, 37, and Turner had 22, so 59 to 36 outscoring-wise. And Turner – I think you just said this. I was looking at the assists, so I might have missed it. But career high, playoff yep. career high, right? 22 mm-hmm. points. So he had two games of six assists back in 2017. He did it twice. That's the last time he's had six assists in a game.
Long time ago.
So I think that added element of his game was so, so good. And, you know, he really didn't have to be a scorer early on. It kind of felt like he was not taking a whole lot of shots. There was a couple of the threes that he missed, I think, or maybe just one. I can't remember. But there was a couple shots where I was like, I didn't like that shot, but it's fine. Like, it went in and out. Like, thought he rushed a few of them. But overall, I liked the shots that he was taking. Thought he was catching it, playing in a much more controlled pace. And that was one thing I was really hitting on our last episode, talking about adjustments. I wanted the shot selection just to be a little bit more under control. And I felt like for the most part, we got that from almost everybody, but especially Miles. I don't feel like a lot of his shots were rushed and hitting the side of the backboard like we saw in game one.
But you were spot on last time. Is like Turner was trying to shoot way too quick instead of being able to take his time to set up. He's such a better three-point shooter when he's able to have, you know, a second or two just to be able to, you know, really get himself set. And I think that tonight, yeah, that you didn't see those misses like off the side of the backboard or anything. Everything looked like a good shot for the most part, but this was the Miles Turner that you knew that in the regular season killed the Bucks, averaged 19 points per game against Milwaukee in those five games. And tonight, yeah, he felt like the guy that you needed him to be. You know, you had mentioned he's got to be better than Brook Lopez and Bobby Portis. That wasn't even close tonight. And I know Brook Lopez
was pretty good.
he hit a lot of threes tonight, and that was frustrating. 6 of 7 from three, but it kind of felt a little kind of flukish. Like, I don't think Brook Lopez is going to have six more threes in a game, you know, against the Pacers. And he only had one rebound. So I thought that Turner did a lot of really good stuff. In specific, that the passing that we touched on really stood out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I tweeted it out too after the first quarter. It was like seven Pacers had scored at the end of the first, and it was just three Bucks had scored. It was Damon and Lopez early on. So we'll get to them in a second, but I think everybody here owes Rick Carlisle an apology if you're sitting there dragging his name through the mud. Eight-man rotation, Faji. An eight-man rotation. Not even a nine-man rotation. I mean, JJ was kind of a little bit, you know, defensive of the rotation and what happened. And Rick Carlisle was like, you know, stay tuned today on the radio when asked about going to a shorter rotation. No Jalen Smith, no Isaiah Jackson, no Doug McDermott. Only one center played in this game. They went to a much more efficient eight-man rotation, and I think that it worked out terrifically for Indiana, and they were able to stay out of foul trouble, which it felt like I felt like Nembhard and Nesmith had more fouls than they actually got called for, I guess, but it was just one of those things where Indiana was able to stay out of foul trouble, and they were able to be efficient with that eight-man rotation.
I said when we had JJ on, I was like, I'll take a nine-man rotation. I really will, but in reality, Jalen Smith wasn't good in game one. He simply wasn't. He just looked off. And I felt that when you saw that eight-man rotation, it worked. And I think that Obi Toppin was someone where I know he finished the game with 9 points. He had those 9 points at halftime, and that was big for the Pacers. It really was. But I felt like rebounding-wise, he pulls down 8 boards. I just felt that he was very active defensively. There were some rough McConnell minutes at times. Yeah. There really was. More specifically in the first half, I was not digging the McConnell minutes, but he had his moments. And Ben Shepherd really came to play. So I felt that those were the three that deserved minutes for the Pacers. And I just felt like Doug McDermott, I know, you know, even JJ said, look, he didn't do anything to lose the Pacers the game. And yes, that's definitely true. He didn't lose the Pacers the game, but he was a minus 17 in 7 minutes. They weren't good minutes for Doug McDermott. So you really trimmed out, you know, some pretty tough minutes in game one. And I think that every player made the most of their opportunities in this game. The eight-man rotation is what I want to see moving forward. Now, things could change with if Giannis coming back. You're going to need more bodies, so you might need Jalen Smith out there, and that's fine. But it's great to go from 11 players playing in the first half to essentially just eight. I know, you know, Jarris and Kendall got in late. That absolutely does not count.
No, it doesn't count. Stars win in the playoffs. Bottom line, stars win in the playoffs. Your bench is important, but it cannot hold you back from winning games. And I think everybody was very like aware of like what just happened here. Why are they just going deeper into the bench? Why not bring in some starters? And I understand like you have to figure out your rotations, and maybe they realized, okay, we can't do this. So they told the guys, hey, you know what? We're changing up the rotation. We're shortening it up. And maybe on Monday they had a harder practice where they did utilize that rotation a little bit more. But I loved it. You talked about it. Obi Toppin was so good in the first half. I felt like the Pacers really kind of, you know, took that lead away from Milwaukee when Obi Toppin came in for Siakam, which is kind of funny thinking about how good Siakam was in this game. When Toppin came in the game with Shepherd before McConnell came in, they started running a little bit more, and it felt like they were playing faster. They started wearing Milwaukee down. Milwaukee was getting a little bit slower. And then McConnell came in for Nembhard, and I thought McConnell had some nice defensive moments more than he did offensively. I think offensively is where he really struggled early on. Just seemed very uncomfortable out there. And that's going to happen. I mean, he's a non-shooter that doesn't, you know, have a lot of size. And when you put more size on him, it's a lot more difficult to score. And, like, it's just kind of like the paint just kind of suffocates in the playoffs. I think everything just gets, like, it shrinks a little bit more. It's harder to score. You have to be more of a prolific scorer. And that's why with McConnell, it was good to see him kind of get a couple of shots here in the second half. Still didn't think he had a great game. It was a fine game. And I think he was probably the worst of the eight players that played in the rotation tonight.
I would definitely say so.
So, you know, I think McConnell had some rough stretches, but he bounced back. He played better in the second half. I still wonder if 16 minutes for McConnell is a little too much. But with Indiana pulling away there with him in the game, at one point when I tweeted, it was like a -9 for what they had done with their bench unit. And then after I tweeted that, they went on a little bit of a run. So maybe I was, you know, like the announcer curse, like, you know, the good jinx, right? So I don't know. But I just felt like McConnell in this game was just like, oh, like he had so many timely bad possessions. And it felt like every time I wanted the Pacers to do something like put Ty back in the game, it's like after the timeout, Rick would run out with the same unit, and then like the next minute he would make that substitution. Same thing with Siakam in the third quarter. So maybe they're just trying to get them a little bit of rest here and there, but I just think they have to be very careful about that, because I think, you know, these guys can play more closer to 40 minutes than 36, 37.
Yeah, and that's the problem is like, yeah, we talked about, you know, McConnell typically plays about 20 minutes per game in the regular season, logs between 16 and 17 minutes tonight. You know, but it's like, yeah, you could give a couple more minutes to Haliburton. He could go from 37 to 40. Maybe Nembhard gets a couple more minutes, but you still probably need him out there for anywhere from maybe 12 to 15 or so, 12 to 14. So he's going to have some sort of role. But at one point, yeah, he was like a -7 or a -8, I remember. And he finished the game as a +5. So he did get better. So that was good. It didn't hurt, didn't cost the Pacers anything. But I thought 8 was the perfect number tonight. I thought that was really good. I think when you looked at it on the flip side for Milwaukee, there was nothing coming off their bench. I mean, there was no sort of production. So, you know, Indiana's bench definitely won this one, even without being, you know, explosive by any means. I think it was 23 points, I believe, off the bench for the Pacers. Just three guys scoring compared to the Bucks had 18. So I just felt overall the Bucks had more guys that came out there, but the Pacers were just more efficient and better in their play. Like, for instance, if Jay Crowder was a -21 in this game in 15 minutes, I felt like the Bucks just when you bring in Bobby Portis to starting lineup, that bench doesn't have much. And I think that's the Pacers were still able to kind of get back to more of the basics. And I feel like through that was a lot of hustle. But also, I want to give Ben Shepherd a quick shout out. Ben Shepherd had some moments tonight. He really did, where the stage looked a little too big for him in game one. Tonight, he absolutely looked like he belonged. And that was 23 big minutes by Ben Shepherd.
He had some big-time shots. Now, the only bad play that I think he really had was that and-one foul on A.J. Green, right? You know, just
that was tough.
That was a tough one, and it kind of came at a critical moment in that quarter. And I'm like, oh, come on, you can't be doing that. But You know, overall, I felt like he was very composed. I really liked his reverse layup that he hit in transition.
That was really nice.
That was very tough, very difficult shot. Hit some threes and took him with confidence. And I think with Ben Shepherd, it's really funny to think about. But, like, imagine if he's, you know, Buddy Hield's still here. Those are all his minutes and not Ben Shepherd's. And Shepherd gives you just a lot more defensively than Buddy Hield would. So that to me was like where he was playing big, and it allowed Nesmith and Nembhard to get a little bit of rest. I didn't love playing that lineup too much without those guys, but for a short stint, it's doable in the right moment. I think this Milwaukee team, they have enough guys that it doesn't feel like it's going to hurt you too much. You know, you just got to keep Dame in check, and that's where I want to transition now to is Damian Lillard. Once again, gets off to a hot start, drops 26 points, Fonzie, in the first half. But the Pacers hold him to 8 points in the second half.
Scoreless in the fourth.
Right.
I just look for Dame. He has killed the Pacers in those first halves. No doubt about it. 61 points in the first halves, just to combine 8 points in those second halves. Look, Dame's an older player. He is. I don't know if the legs are getting tired in the second half. He definitely has not shot the ball as much in the second half. He's come out aggressive in these first quarters and launching it from threes. In the fourth quarter, you could have forgot that he was even really out there. He just was not a factor. And I think that that's something that we've really got to give the Pacers credit in specific. Andrew Nembhard was a pest tonight. He deserves a lot of credit. And I really think that, you know, even for Brook Lopez was another player that really got off to that hot start. And really, both those guys kind of had quiet second halves. But for Dame, when you saw him score 26 in the first, you know, you are thinking, could this be like a 50-point night? Could it be a 40-point night? And the Pacers really locked in. And back-to-back games, seeing that makes me feel really confident.
Yeah, Dame was 0-for-3 in the fourth quarter in 6 minutes of play. And oof, I think part of it was Indiana got out running. And I tweeted this out, and I'm not trying to say it like I'm a genius, but I just felt like Indiana was not doing a good job of attacking Damian Lillard when they were on offense and making Dame play defense. I thought to myself,
definitely not game one.
Yeah, and they didn't do it at all in the first half. It was kind of like just let Dame guard Nembhard, don't have Nembhard in a lot of the actions. And then if you go back and watch the very beginning of the third quarter, Indiana got onto a big run. They ran like three or four plays straight at Dame, trying to attack Dame on defense, and they got basket after basket, and you know, they got some fouls, they got some good looks. And I thought to myself, this is what they should have been doing in the first half, and maybe that's an adjustment they will make moving forward, because I understand, like, you do have your weaknesses with Lopez guarding Siakam, and you have that foot speed of Siakam being able to kind of drive past Lopez, and, you know, Tyrese got a good look on a pick and roll there when he got some space finally, because it's really hard with how well Pat Bev is kind of shading Tyrese. But
he's played well, yes.
I just feel like the way Indiana was utilizing Nembhard a little bit more and attacking Dame more when there were switches on Siakam, it was like, boom, Siakam went straight to the post. Miles had a great pass to him in the post. You know, take advantage of Dame trying to play defense on a bigger guy. Like, Dame doesn't want to play defense, and he's trying to switch out of everything. You know, to me, at least Tyrese is 6'5", and I thought Tyrese fought a lot more defensively tonight than he had in a long time, honestly. Like, it reminded me of shades of, like, what he did against OKC on the road a couple of weeks ago. So that, to me, is where we saw an improved Tyrese defensively. But I just thought attacking him was so, so important.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Going back to Tyrese real quick. He tracked down a fast break and blocked it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow. That was some great hustle. But yeah, attacking Dame was huge. I just felt that Andrew Nembhard kind of became it's like a coming out party. Like, obviously, we think of like the coming out party was the game winner against the Lakers a while back, but like people forget about that outside of Pacer Nation. Those that were watching this game tonight were like, who is that? Like, that guy's really good. He's really like hustling. He's taking it at Dame. And he really was this was the Andrew Nembhard. When we talk about being an X factor, he was huge in this game. I want to say he had about 9 points in that third quarter.
He did.
I believe it was. And that was pivotal for the Pacers to be able to push ahead and really get a lead. He led the Pacers in scoring in that quarter, one more point than Pascal Siakam. That says a lot because Nembhard was someone who didn't really show up in game one. In game two, yeah. And that second half, he won that second half against Damian Lillard, no doubt about it.
He was awesome. And he got a technical foul. Nembhard did because him and Pat Bev kind of got into it. Pat Bev definitely flopped, acted like Nembhard got
that was crazy
on the elbow on the drive there. But I love the aggressive. Yeah. But the aggressive offensive rebounds from Nembhard. Just being a force out there, you could feel it, and it felt like he was taking it personal because, you know, I thought he had some good moments defensively too against Dame in the first half. Like, Dame just hit some tough shots. Like, let's just give Dame some credit. Like, Dame is a great basketball player.
He really is.
He was getting a lot of free throws on a lot of minimal contact fouls that they were not giving to Indiana, which was just very frustrating early on. I'm like, man, every time Pascal was driving, I feel like someone's pushing him or tripping him and he's getting nothing. Dame's barely getting touched and they're like, oh, foul, two free throw shots. And I'm like, okay, you know, because I think Nembhard got a offensive rebound and then they called a foul on Dame for fouling Nembhard on a putback. Yep. And so it was just like little things like that. You were starting to see how Nembhard can really impact the game. And I had somebody in my comments on Twitter ask me, why is Nembhard a starter? They asked me that in the first half. So I hope you watch the second half, because if you did, you saw exactly why he is a starter. He's a really good basketball player. He's in the second playoff game of his entire career. And I would say up to this point, you know, he's still been, to me, the Pacers' best perimeter defender. And I understand that Damian Lillard is still going to drop 30-some points a game. That's just a very tough matchup for your first ever playoff, you know, moment. But just the way he bounced back, the fearlessness that he has in him. And we're starting to see a more chippy Andrew Nembhard. And I love it. I love seeing the dog in him.
We are. I brought it up last time. When he got the technical the other game, he woke up. He woke up. Something happened in him that he just came and was really like turning up a notch. Same thing happened this game. I feel like when he gets chippy and needs to be separated or anything going on, he takes his game to that next level. And I think the Pacers can feed off that. I think they've had times where, you know, players have done it where it's been like an Isaiah Jackson or something like that. Sometimes that gets the fellows going. And I felt like one thing I talked about, you know, maybe it was a previous episode, there was never a moment in game one where the Pacers bench was like going wild and you know, giving each other high fives. We saw a lot of that. And I felt that Andrew Nembhard had some of those plays. Nembhard and Siakam had those that gets the team going. And when that happens, it's contagious. And I felt that he was hitting shots and making plays that were just huge at pivotal points in this game to be able to keep pushing the Pacers forward and keep holding Milwaukee back. And I just felt that for Andrew Nembhard to have the type of performance that he did, 20 points on 8 of 11 shooting, I mean, he really was, I feel like, the difference in this game today.
Yeah, he was somebody, like, when I said that he could be the X factor in a series, like, that's what I meant by that. That's what I meant. You know,
I mean, think about it. And not even, I'm sorry to cut you off, but like, no. If we go down 2-0, the outlook is so bad on this team. That's the type of performance that could potentially save a series. It is now 1-1 going back to Indiana, and we'll get into that more, but like, that type of performance is when you wonder who's going to step up. You know who your top three guys are. You know, you can say, hey, we'll probably get good performances out of two out of three, but who's that other guy that we're not expecting? And tonight, Andrew Nembhard was that guy. If you don't know his name, you better pay attention to him, because he's going to be with the Pacers for the next few years, and he's only getting better.
Yeah, I know we were going to talk about the role players a little bit later, but I think we've already touched on Nembhard. We've touched on Obi. We talked on Shepherd and McConnell. So might as well just bring up Nesmith now and just, you know, forget what we had planned for later, because Nesmith was still so good in this game too, even though the scoring was not there. Just 4-10 from the field, 11 points. Like, it wasn't like a great statistical game for Aaron Nesmith. And I still feel like he is a little bit undersized when it comes to guarding Chris Middleton on that low block. And we saw the Pacers. I'm so glad we saw the Pacers finally double teamed it. They sent Ben Shepherd out there and they double teamed it in the fourth quarter. And I was like, oh yes, another adjustment that I'm like, they're not letting Chris Middleton just get on the low block by himself. So I was so excited to see that. But there was one rebound that Nesmith had when the game was getting tight, where he just towered over Brook Lopez.
Yep.
Grabbed that ball. And that is the difference between games one and games two. Because in game two, the Pacers, they did what they didn't do in game one. They went out there and fought like crazy for stuff. Even the charge that he was called for a blocking foul, that could have been challengeable. I love the way that Nesmith was just his old self. The shot still is not there where you want it to be at Fauci, but overall, I just felt like the little ways he impacted the game, just being physical, making them throw bad passes, like jumping up to try to like tip passes away from Middleton and things like that. I was just really impressed overall with how Aaron Nesmith played in this game.
He fought all night, and Chris Middleton was really good in game one. He really was. Middleton had 15 points. I know he did get banged up early on this game, and I do think that honestly made a difference. I don't think that Middleton was maybe 100%, but I just felt that Nesmith was hounding Chris Middleton, and Middleton had a very quiet game. Last game, Middleton scored 15 points in the second half. He had 15 points tonight, and he was a minus 10. In game one, I think he was a plus 25 or plus 27. So it was crazy. He was a big difference in game one, especially in that second half. But for Nesmith, 11 points. Yeah. All right. Seven assists for Aaron Nesmith is just something that you can't count on. And when you get that, that's a reason the Pacers were moving this ball left and right. I mean, there was four guys in the starting lineup that had six assists or more. The team basketball that we saw was fantastic, but guys were working on both ends, and Aaron Nesmith was one of those guys that was bringing it on both ends. You could live with 11 points out of him. He could always be that fifth starter, you know, in terms of scoring or anything like that. You're fine with that. But what he brought from the ball movement, a defensive standpoint, I mean, the 36 minutes that Aaron Nesmith played, I know some people say he shouldn't be a starting small forward in this league. Tonight, he was vital to the Pacers.
Well, if you look at the minutes, Fauci, Chris Middleton, 36 minutes, 27 seconds. Aaron Nesmith, 36 minutes, 27 seconds. They were matching minutes. And there's no doubt about that. They like that matchup, Indiana does. And, you know, Middleton only had 15 points, but I still think that what they did to try to trap that was smart, because they didn't want to get Middleton going. And you look, I think there was times even too when like switches would happen. Maybe Siakam would be guarding Middleton for a play or two, and you'd see Nesmith on a Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis, it took him 16 shots to get 14 points. So
that's disgusting.
You live with that. And that's the thing. Like, you live with making other guys beat you outside of Middleton and Lillard. And I understand Lopez was awesome in this game. He was 8 of 13 from the field and was just ridiculous from 6 of 7, like you mentioned earlier. But other than that, like, he shot a lot of those. I think he had 4 in the first half, so he really didn't make a whole lot in the second. So it was one of those things, you live by it. And you could tell at the end of the first quarter, Lopez was getting tired. The Pacers' pace was so, so good. And they were scoring off. They scored back-to-back plays. On one, I think, was a Lopez fell down after like a made basket. Pacers scored, and then Lopez thought he got fouled. He was complaining to the ref for just a half second. Indiana pushed the ball up. They got another layup. It's little things like that. They were able to play their pace. They were able to play their style. And I think that's what allowed other guys like the assists to kind of go up, because we saw the assists go up in this game, like you mentioned, from so many different people. I think the Pacers finished with 37 assists. Is that right?
A playoff franchise record, 37 assists.
37 assists.
That is just it's actually, I apologize. It was 38 assists for these Indiana Pacers.
Okay, 38, excuse me.
That is a franchise record in the playoffs. Just amazing ball movement. It's 38 assists on 50 made baskets.
Yep.
I mean, that 55% is
55% from the field.
That is really something. The Bucks had 24 assists.
Yeah.
So it's a big difference. So I just think that you couldn't have asked for a better ball movement type of game. The Pacers were able to play their style. I think it was Draymond Green was saying earlier today that it's not sustainable what Indiana does. Like, it doesn't work in the playoffs. They're not going to be able to score like that. Well, they put up 125 points tonight, and I think that we knew what we saw in game one was not the Pacers. The ball will go in the net. And that is exactly what happened tonight. The three-point shooting was back, 16 of 36. I just felt that the Pacers were giving that extra pass. Even if they missed a shot, a lot of times they swung that thing around enough to get multiple looks. So I couldn't have asked for a better night, you know, distributing-wise.
Yeah, and I think, too, like, the Pacers outscored the Bucks in every quarter, Fauci. That's another big talking point.
Wow.
And they held Milwaukee under 30 points in every single quarter, which we know is their, you know, target goal, to hold each team under 30 points per quarter. So, you know, 26 in the first, 29 in the second, 28 in the third, and 25 in the fourth. You live with that, especially if you're scoring 30, 30, 32, and 33. So I think the Pacers got stronger as the game went on and the Bucks got weaker. And I think that has to do a lot with what JJ was talking about with the age. I think that that's a big thing there. Like, the Bucks are just an older team, and when they're playing this fast pace, like, they wear out quicker. So Indiana was able to do that. But, you know, we've talked a lot about the assist and things like that. And I know the points in the paint were another big talking point for the Pacers, because they were much, much better in that category too. Do you have the stats up for points in the paint, Fauci?
Yeah. So in terms of, you know, points in the paint, that's really where the Pacers were dominating in this game. They outscored Milwaukee 52 to 36 points in the paint. And that is a big difference. And Giannis, that's a man that led the NBA in points in the paint. He ain't out there, and it shows.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think that that's going to be another wrinkle that's going to be interesting whenever Giannis does return to the lineup for the Bucks. We'll see if it is game, you know, game three Friday night. Is it going to be game four on Sunday? Like, who knows? It felt like Giannis looked pretty calm and cool there in the first half, and then didn't see a whole lot of Giannis in the second half with the pants to the bench. So that's important to me. But I think what's most important, Fauci, is three-point shots. The Pacers, 44.4% from three in this game after shooting around 20-some percent in game one. They go 16 of 36, outscore Milwaukee by 9 points. From the three-point line in this game, Milwaukee had 13 made threes, Indiana had 16, and I had someone tweet at me and said, it feels like, at one point they were tied, I think they had like 10 made threes each, and they were like, it feels like Milwaukee has so many more made threes than Indiana. And I said, the reason why is because it's two guys hitting everything, right? But it was Lopez and Dame, but the Pacers were just distributing the ball, and everybody on that side of it, what was just, you know, contributing. It wasn't just one guy hitting threes. It was everybody on the Pacers.
It really was. And I think that this game could have gotten you know, way out of hand, because in the beginning when Milwaukee was hitting all those threes, a lot of times it was Indiana firing right back, hitting from three. I mean, they were trading three-point shots in that first half, and it's important that the Pacers were able to go shot for shot with Milwaukee until to see who could keep, you know, hitting them, you know, in the long run. And I think that Indiana just showed, I mean, 16 of 36, that's Pacer basketball. Milwaukee did shoot still 40%. But, yeah, you mentioned, you know, a lot of those threes happened early on. I think Milwaukee might have started the game maybe 5 of 7 from three. So they pretty much finished, you know, the rest of the game going, you know, about 8 of 25, you know, after that. So Indiana ended up, you know, settling down, taking it in the taking care of business on the perimeter. And I think that that was huge to see. Yeah, you mentioned the 18-point differential in the first game from three. Yeah, that was not the case tonight. So Indiana, this was the Pacers team that led the NBA in scoring, led the NBA in field goal percentage. It showed tonight. This was the offense that we saw in this regular season.
It definitely was. So honestly, we really saw the Pacers play their style, and it worked out well for them. And that was despite Tyrese Haliburton, once again, not having the offensive night that maybe Pacer fans were looking for. I think that Haliburton even said he was going to be more aggressive, things like that. Only 12 points in this game, Flashy, but he had 12 assists. He had 4 rebounds. He was a plus 17 in the game. What were your thoughts on the overall performance here of Tyrese Haliburton?
My thoughts were he tried to be aggressive early on. I think he had about 5 shots in that first quarter, and that was a big difference. He had 4 at halftime last game. So I felt like he tried. He had hit a couple threes early on. He had like 2 made threes. And I think after that, he didn't want to force it. You know, he had about, I think from about the 2-minute mark in the first quarter all the way till deep into the third, I don't even think he even had a shot, or he maybe hit 1 shot, I think, that was taken. So there was a large span where he didn't really get any shots up, but he was what we needed. He was a plus 17. He had 12 points. He had 12 assists. He didn't need to force it when you had everybody else having it going. Like, what is the need for Haliburton to put up maybe 20 shots or so when, you know, Siakam's extremely efficient and Turner's extremely efficient and Nembhard has it going? He was able to play his game. And I felt that it's great to be able to get a win when he only has 10 shots. I tweeted out, how many shots do we think he'll get up? I said 14. And people said, that's not enough. We won the game, he only had 10. So yeah, I think the best for Tyrese Haliburton is yet to come in that series. In the series, the fact that it's 1-1, I'm really excited about that, because there's going to be a Haliburton breakout game, and chances are it might just come in a win.
I do have to ask, since you were so adamant about it last episode, did he make the first basket or take the first basket for the Pacers?
He didn't take the first basket, but he hit his first shot from three.
Oh, well, that's all you said, though.
Yes, it's not what I said, but he didn't have the ball. I think like Nembhard, or maybe he brought it up, immediately passed to Nesmith.
Took a corner three and missed it.
I think he took like the second shot of this game and hit it. So he was more aggressive early on, and I think that seeing that first three-pointer go in was like, yeah, you got to trust your shot. Like, it's going to be all right. And things turned out to be all right.
I'm just giving you a hard time, because you were like, the first thing he said for a game.
It's rare. It's rare for him to take the first shot of the game. So he was more aggressive, and I like that.
Yeah, well, I will just say this. Like, I felt like he played within the flow of the offense. I felt like last game he was a little bit kind of like passive and didn't try as much. In this game, I felt like even when he was involved in the actions, he was making the right reads, and it didn't feel like he was trying to overshoot or overforce anything, which is really what you want, because you know Tyrese is more of a pass-first guy anyway, and he's got to find that balance of being a pass-first guy and a scorer. And I know that that's not always going to be like what happens, but I just think that Milwaukee did such a really good job defending him. And Pat Bev, as annoying as he is, you know, you don't want to give him too much credit, but like, that guy's a tough, tough defender, and he was working hard on Tyrese and making things difficult for him by shading him so much. And when they run that pick and roll out action, you know, he's getting blitzed, he's getting double teamed. And it's one of those things where Tyrese is just making the right read. It's one of those things where if he has an open look from three, I think he's going to take it. If he has an opportunity to drive to the basket, he'll take those. And maybe there are a few times throughout the game where he could have been a little bit more aggressive at maybe shooting that open three or sprinting a little bit harder to get to the basket. But I felt like overall, He took the right shots, didn't need to overplay it or overtake them because everybody else, like the ball was moving so well. Like when you have 38 assists in a game, I don't think anybody can complain about the shots. I think that when you look at last game, the ball wasn't moving. It was sticking a lot. And that's when you needed Tyrese maybe to step up and be a little bit more because you got yourself into so much of a hole. In this game where it's a little bit more justifiable, it's because everybody was stepping up and playing a bigger role and contributing. So I think when we say Tyrese needs to be more aggressive and take more shots, that's when we're responding to a game where there wasn't anybody really stepping up and doing that. And yeah, everybody exactly. looked passive. This is a game. This is Pacers basketball to me. When they have 37 assists, they're clicking as a team. Everybody's kind of in sync. You know, everybody's heavily involved in the scoring. That's when they're at their best, not when you have just one or two guys dropping 35 points each. You need a more balanced scoring attack from Indiana to really feel good about that team.
Yeah, you do. I felt that Haliburton was what the Pacers needed tonight. They didn't need the guy that averaged over 20 points per game in the regular season. What they needed tonight was, hey, lead this offense, because I think that the players, everybody had the hot hand. So we're going to get a better Tyrese Haliburton performance. I'm looking forward to it. I had a friend text me and say, you know, just 10 shots. It was like, that's not going to be the narrative tonight. It's not. The Pacers weren't trailing by 20, needing him to be overly aggressive. He tried to be more aggressive early on, but other teammates just had that hot hand. So we've seen one thing I do want to say, though. You know, for the Knicks game, Jalen Brunson had a really rough shooting night. 29 shots, but the last shot he took was one of the biggest ones in the game. So I think that for Haliburton, we could live with him taking more shots, even if he's not making them, but he's not the kind of guy that's going to just keep shooting just to shoot. So I think that he gained some confidence in his shot tonight against this defense. But I also want to say the Pacers, in my opinion, did a much better job, specifically Siakam and Turner, in setting a lot of screens to free Haliburton. I thought that got him a lot of looks, and they needed that because, yeah, Pat Bev was all over him in the beginning of this game. So I think the Pacers did a good job making those adjustments. I looked it up. Haliburton hit his first shot at the 10-minute, 21-second mark of this game. He got to work. So that was great to see. But, yeah, we didn't need a 20-shot night from Tyrese Haliburton. He showed he was a little bit more aggressive. No one's going to say that he was very aggressive. But on LA tonight, don't worry about it. Siakam, Turner, Nembhard, they had us.
There's going to be a game in this series when Tyrese goes off. He's going to have a 30-point game or close to it, I think, in one of these games. I don't know what this series is going to end up going, if it's going to go six, if it's going to go seven, who knows. But I do think that we're going to have ourselves a lengthy series. I think these are two pretty evenly matched teams in terms of like overall talent. It just depends on, you know, who shows up to play in that game and whatnot. So that really is what I think it all comes down to. And I think Haliburton is going to enjoy being in Gainbridge Fieldhouse for two games. It's going to be epic. I'll be there for both of them. So
going to be incredible.
I'm pretty excited for it. I know Miles Turner is excited about it. I think Pacer fans are going to be really excited just to be able to be in the arena and get a chance to see the Pacers versus their rival this season, the Milwaukee Bucks, in a playoff series playing meaningful basketball. And like, I know we touched on it a little bit earlier, but I just think that Haliburton's defense was so much more impressive in this game. And I don't want to just gloss over it because he was fighting hard. He was staying with this guy, pressuring full court. He was, you know, banging a little bit more than we usually see him bang. And I think that he got like 3 fouls in this game. And that just shows you how much more aggressive he's being defensively, because I don't think he really got any offensive fouls. So it was just Tyrese being a little bit more impactful, and he wasn't kind of like getting beat off the dribble too much. It was, you know, he's mostly guarding Pat Bev, which is not a great guy in terms of like ISO scoring, which is a good matchup for Haliburton. But at the same time, like he was, like you talked about that Malik Beasley block that he had, like he was just amazing, doing little things like that. And I think that his size allows him to do much better on traps, where he can step out, make that first initial trap, and then let Nembhard recover and then retreat back to Bev or whoever he's guarding, Beasley, whatever. Because I just think that the length and the wingspan that he has, it's a tougher go around than someone like Dame or someone a little bit shorter. So, you know, I think that he's still learning, obviously, not a great defensive player, not saying that he is, but he is improving on that end. And I think that you saw him buy into that side of the basketball more than I think he has probably in about a month.
I think every player really bought in tonight defensively. I really do feel that every player had moments. It's funny that you mentioned Malik Beasley, because that guy was doing the talking in the beginning of the year. They ain't going to want to see us. It's not going to be pretty. The only thing he was known for in this game was getting blocked by Haliburton. So very minimal role for Beasley. But overall for the Pacers, I mean, guys, I just think that this is what it's all about. It took maybe 30 seconds into this game for me to just be like, and I said the same thing in game one. This is intense. Playoff basketball just hits differently. I'm so happy that the Pacers are back in the playoffs. I'm so jealous that I'm not going to be there for game three. But that atmosphere is going to be incredible. I highly recommend any and everybody to be in that building to give the Pacers that jolt, to make Milwaukee feel, you know, kind of threatened in a, oh man, this is going to be a tough environment to play in right now. Because for a lot of Pacers, this is their first, you know, playoff game in front of this home crowd. Make it special. And let's go up in this series. I mean, that game three is going to be what playoff basketball is all about and what makes Indiana the best spot for basketball.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be an awesome, awesome game, and we'll see what happens. I think that a couple of days rest here, the Pacers will have a couple of days off. They'll travel tonight and get home in the morning early or late this morning. I guess when you're listening to this, it'll be early this morning, and they'll get some sleep, and then they'll be able to get back to practicing before they play Milwaukee at 5:30. Don't forget 5:30 on ESPN. Now, there was a lot of trouble, I guess, from people not being able to figure out where the game was at. I will just say this moving forward. Any game on NBA TV when Bally Sports is airing it will be blocked out. I think that should have been something we talked about on this podcast just to give people a heads up. But I will just say this. Always check multiple days in advance to where the game's going to be aired at and make sure that it's going to be shown in your area, because I get it. It's annoying. But at the same time, you can get League Pass and Bally Sports for a trial period and get like a week's, you know, free preview basically. So Just next time, if you're having issues, just try that out. I know there was a lot of people that were upset with the Bally app. I didn't have any issues with it tonight, so not really sure what's going on there. But I think that regardless, it was great to see a Pacers win, Flatchy. Great to see the Pacers bounce back and kind of prove to Milwaukee, like, hey, you know, you beat us in game one, but we're not going anywhere. This is going to be a series.
Everyone's life is drastically different from that last Pacers, you know, playoff win. The world is a different place since that last Pacers playoff win in 2018. A lot has changed, but tonight it just really it really meant something. It really felt great because it felt like the sky was falling for the fan base. I mean, a lot of people were saying this series is done, or, you know, same old Pacers, or what are they doing? You know, what 11-man rotation, this, that. We made the changes. We made the necessary changes. Guys stepped up, and this is every bit a series. The Bucks were the first home team to lose a playoff game thus far in 2024. The Pacers snapped that streak. It showed. I mean, look, that's tough. The home team at the home court, it's really, really important. If the Pacers can have that environment and protect home court, Alex, they could take this series, and that would really be something. I think we're finally starting to show, hey, we're not some pushover. We're not some regular season team. We're here to play. And let's take down these Bucks in game three.
The Pacers did indeed, you know, do exactly what our shirt says, our playoff shirt says, and that is smear the deer. They beat them by 17 points. Great bounce back win after, you know, a disappointing loss in game one. Looked like a totally different team. It looked like the Pacers team that we know that they're capable of being. So, you know, I'm glad that they got this one, because I had a lot of fans and friends of mine messaging me saying, you know what, if the Pacers lose this game, I'm not going to watch the rest of the series. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
That was tough to hear.
But they were just saying, like, if they can't show up and prove that they're like a legit playoff team, then I'm not going to invest my time in them. So, you know what, for those that were doubting, now you have a reason to be invested. So, with that being said, Flatchy, let's go ahead and wrap this one up. We've been going a little bit lengthy tonight, but hey, it's a big victory, so why not spend about an hour talking about it?
Well, hey, the last thing I'm going to say before this is there's a lot of people talking a lot of smack, and I didn't hear from any of them tonight. So it's easy to kind of kick this team when they're down, but when they rise to the occasion, and, you know, we got to, for all the people that were loud saying, I'm not going to watch this team, this, We don't need the apologies. Just show up. Just believe. It's a 7-game series for a reason. So that's the note that I want to end it on. It's 1-1. We're going back to Indiana. Let's take care of business.
Absolutely, Pacha. Well, go ahead and tell everybody where they can find us at on social media.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Twitter at PacersPod, STP. You can find Alex on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at _FACCI. You can find us on Instagram at PacersPodSTP. You can find us on TikTok, Set the Pace. You can find us on Facebook, Set the Pace. Alex, tell them where they can check us out on YouTube.
Ladies and gentlemen, go to YouTube.com, join the conversation, leave us a comment in the comment section at YouTube.com/Setting the Pace, a Pacers podcast. And if you're listening to this on the podcast app, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. And if you haven't already, view that link in the description below. Check out our merch store. We've got plenty of merch for you. Any kind of thing you're looking for, just view the website and you can find it there. And if you sign up for the emails, you'll get 30% off on all your orders. So that is a bargain of a deal. So if you want some beer, smear the deer, excuse me, t-shirts or beat the Bucks playoff shirts, and you want to get them in, they will, you know, ship those fast to you if you pay for extra shipping, and get those by Friday or Sunday if you're going to the game. I think you guys are going to love those shirts. They have come in and people have said they like them. So make sure you guys check those out. But Fauci, if you're glad the Pacers are back in the win column in the postseason, then hit me with those three words.
Let's go, Pacers.
Beat the Bucks.